G'day mate, this is Noisemaze, Ubuntu Open Source Podcast, where today we're going to be discussing various aspects of Ubuntu and open source software. This is our first podcast coming to you from Brisbane, Australia, Forest Lake, and hope to make it a regular event. Tonight we're going to cover a range of topics, including things like Linux distributions, a little how-to, something for Ubuntu and Kubuntu, and general discussion on open source and a little bit about open source for Windows. So tonight, to start off, I thought we might look at a distro. I'm just going to pick one at random, sort of to provide a little bit more awareness of the number of distros that there are out there. A little bit about some of their specific intended usage, either as a server or desktop, or maybe a rescue disk. So one of my sort of favourites, or older favourites I should sort of say, would probably be Nopix. It's a great distro which you can have a really good look at nopix.org or nopix.net. Nopix is basically a live bootable CD which has a range of software on it, which is GNU/Linux. It has excellent hardware auto detection, automatic hardware detection I should say, support for many graphics cards, sound cards, SCSIs and USB devices. Its intention is sort of across the board. Ultimately, sort of, I personally found Nopix excellent for its automatic hardware detection capabilities, and use Nopix as an installed desktop, but personally have preferred it as a live CD just to show off to people to sort of that have got Windows, so you don't have to actually install it, which makes it great, and hence live CD or rescue CD, which is the greatest thing, especially when people's other OSs have crashed and we need to get some documents back and the odd emails and things like that. So there's some of the things that, you know, Nopix can be used for and what I've used it for, and so go and check out the website. And then there is also now sort of a lot of variations to Nopix, such as Damn Small Nopix, Nopix or Not Myth, which has got a Myth TV, which is an excellent PVR program. So for anyone out there who's got a TV capture card and want to have a bit of a muck around and make a really nice little personal video recording and entertainment unit, check out Not Myth. Then for the security buffs out there, there's the Nopix STD, which is a great little security distro. It has heaps of little handy security tools for checking how secure your servers are and things like that, and diagnosing network problems. So basically there are a few variations of Nopix, such as Damn Small Linux and Nopix STD, which is a great little one with security tools, and it actually stands for Security Tools Distro. So that one's quite handy for checking out security on the network and also making sure that your traffic and everything's flowing nicely. Some nice little analyzing tools in there. So that sort of pretty much sort of gives you a bit of a like rundown on the basics of Nopix. I only very much touched on it and pretty much my personal sort of notes more than anything. So we might look at moving on now to the next topic for tonight, which is going to be a little bit more specifically related to Ubuntu and Kubuntu distro. Basically, the thing I want to look at today is just getting people set up to get the universe and the multiverse repositories available to them. These repositories do have software which is considered non-free and commercial. So from this point of view, there is specific EULAs that the users, or licenses that the users themselves really have to read and agree to. But from a personal use point of view, just make sure that you check with any restrictions, because it will obviously, or should give you access to DVD playback features, which I do believe is currently not legal in certain parts of America or all of the United States, but I will check that and advise you next week a bit more on that. So that might be one of our little topics we'll discuss in the next podcast here from Brisbane. What are these universe and multiverse? Well, that's the repositories. This is what holds all the files and that basically go to make the piece of software you want to use or install. And from here, you need to obviously have an internet connection, which we would sort of feel is definitely an advantage to be able to keep up with updates or security patches that may have been applied. As you know, with open source, there are literally millions of people around the world working on open source software constantly, improving it across the board in their different areas. But anyway, so that's a little bit about repositories. Now, in Ubuntu and Canopix, which basically Ubuntu is the GNOME desktop-based system and Kubuntu is the K desktop environment-based system, the underlying base is the same. The only difference is your desktop interface. I personally am a KDE user. I have a friend and quite a few people who are going GNOME or GNOME, depending on however you want to pronounce it. It may be a little bit more widely supported in the Ubuntu circles because Ubuntu itself is pretty much GNOME, but they do have their KDE, which they are supporting as well. So I, as I say, have had KDE and I'm quite happy. So basically I'll discuss those KDE and GNOME a bit more in another segment down the line, a bit more in depth, and we'll keep going on to looking at setting up these repositories. Now, for the GNOME user, if they can click on the systems tab, which is up, should be up at the top of your screen to your left, and then go to administration and click on Synaptic Package Manager. This is a graphical tool that allows you to search and then select for installations different pieces of software. I think we'll have a discussion on Synaptic more deeply later. So now, just for the KDE users, so we can cover, because once you're into Synaptic, the steps are the same. So we'll get the KDE user to click on the K button in the bottom left, go System, and then Synaptic Package Manager. Now, both users in GNOME and KDE will now be looking at a login prompt. This is where you enter your password, which you should be the sudoer, as they call them in Ubuntu. So put in your password and hit OK. Then basically, once you've done that, it should open up the window. From here, you will see a window with basically a panel down the left-hand side, or a pane, and then another pane or panel, or call them panels actually, the panels on the left-hand side and then one on the right-hand side of the main window, the new little window that's popped up. Okay, let's look at the top bar across there, go from File, go across, click on Settings and Repositories. Then you'll note there'll be an installation tab. Click Add. There are three separate repositories, Dapper Drake, Security Updates and Updates. Select each repository and check Unofficially Supported, Restricted Copy, Community Maintenance, Universe and Non-Free Multiverse. Ensure you click OK between each repositories to save the settings. So basically what we're doing there is telling Synaptic to tell apt-get, which is the engine that sort of goes on the net and retrieves the packages and such, and we'll discuss that apt-get in a later podcast, what packages it's going to need, what the dependencies are, and then basically grabs them for you and then installs them. Now, there may be some configuring to do depending on what packages you put in, and we're not covering that right now. So what we're going to do now is basically look at moving on to the next step. Now you should see that all three repositories under the channels basically are marked. So make sure restricted community and non-free appears under each repository. Okay, now we've added that. Now what you need to do is basically click OK or close, and then you'll be back to that main 2-3 plane window that we had initially when we started Synaptic. Okay, from here click the reload button. This will then basically cause your system to go online and fetch information about what packages are stored on the universe, the multiverse, the restricted copyright areas or repositories. Sorry. These areas basically now have an information file which puts extra software and packages, etc., into that listing of software that will be available for you to search for. That sort of gets a set. You're now ready to look at installing things like your NVIDIA or your ATI graphics card drivers, which you get from the commercial repository or the non-free, the multiverse. And also back to starting in 3, 2, 1, you should now have all these three repositories under each channel. Make sure that officially supported and the restricted and the community, which is the universe and the non-free multiverse, all appear under each of the repositories that you had. Now for all those people who have sort of had the CD there, you could actually untick the CD on the top section of your Adaptec, and this will then in turn mean that it wouldn't prompt you for the CD when if you go to install something. You'll get the latest up-to-date packages from the internet, which ensures that any security updates have been applied, any new features have been added, gives you the full advantage of having the latest of the stable Dapper release. So that basically covers the adding of universe and multiverse to your sources. Now what we're going to look at, we'll cover later, is custom repos and Source-O-Matic, which is on the internet. So but you could always go and have a look at Source-O-Matic, type it into Google. I think it's source-o-matic.ubuntu.nl.org, but I may not be 100%. I will check, and we will find that it is www.ubuntulinux.nl/source-o-matic. So you can always check that out in the meantime, but we'll in the next week or so look at covering that as well. And I will also cover maybe a non-graphic CLI command line style install of, or sorry, not install, but updates, and then also down the track look at introducing the newer users to the command line, even though most tasks can be performed through a graphical interface, there is still the odd task that is almost as easy to do CLI command line as opposed to doing it through a graphic mode. So we'll have a look at that later on. Okay, what I want to do now is maybe do a little bit of a, well, I suppose it's not really a, well it is, it's a how-to. We've now just added these great new repos to our list in Synaptic, so let's covering a little bit on a how-to, sort of just a very general one over the podcast here, and we might make sure that we give you web addresses for the actual sort of more full-on how-tos and things like that. Well, not sort of full-on, but more in-depth how-tos. So what we might do is look at doing Firestarter, and because we've just done the Synaptic sort of thing in the previous segment, we might look at using that this time to set up Firestarter. Now, Firestarter, what is it? Well, it's a great little open source front end for the Linux firewall or IP tables. This is what helps keep us hackers out of your system. Okay, so what are a couple of the key features of this? Well, it's obviously open source, which is the number one key feature. It's available free of charge. It's an excellent little graphical interface, great for personal use, well, obviously, even desktops, servers, gateways, or even though a lot of servers probably may not have a graphical interface, normally for that I just use normal IP tables, which if you were working on servers you would probably be doing IP tables as well, so we might discuss IP tables in brief one night later in the show. So you can enable internet connection sharing, same as you would if you had Windows and you wanted to share your internet. You can define both inbound and outbound access policies, what you're going to let in, what you're going to let out, great for peer-to-peer sharing. Decide what you just don't even want to know about, as in whitelisting or blacklisting it. So whitelisting and blacklisting, blacklist is obviously no-go. A whitelist is a yes, yes, yes. If you go with a whitelist, you are basically restricted pretty much to the whitelist. So a blacklist is generally people's preferred choice. Then it'll set up DHCP for you as well. It'll let you have a look at real-time events that are happening. So someone or something nasty on the network is trying to sort of invade your system. It'll let you know. So that's pretty much the basics of what it is. So if everyone who's got Ubuntu, okay, Ubuntu, we can click on the search button. Click on the search button and type in Firestarter. Now, once the results come up for Firestarter in the left-hand pane, then right-click on Firestarter in the right pane. So that basically then will open up a little menu, and on there you'll be able to click Mark for Installation. Okay, now that you've done that, what we're going to do now is we're going to click the Apply button, and what'll happen then is basically it'll install. So when that's all done, click OK, and then we can close Synaptic. So from here, we should have installed Firestarter. So now it should appear automatically under the Internet menu for you through either your applications for GNOME users, or again under K in the corner at the bottom right for the KDE users. And then basically from here you'll be able to click on it. It'll ask you for the password, because your IP tables are basically controlling the traffic on your whole system. They are, you require that root user or super user privileges or administrator privileges to do this. So basically you would enter your password in, and then from there the first time wizard will run for you. Now, unless you want to, if you just got a standalone computer which is hooked up to a DHCP ADSL router or a cable OptusNet which has got cable, and you've been using another operating system such as Windows, then your ADSL or cable device will be emitting, or well, not emitting, but providing a DHCP or a dynamic IP address for anything that plugs into it. So you will automatically, obviously, because you're on the internet, have that internet connection. God damn. Gonna have to start again. Okay. Okay. Now, once the installation had finished for Synaptic, you've closed Synaptic off, what's going to happen then is that you're going to basically have, under your internet menu, you should see Firestarter, maybe under administration for GNOME, as I'm mainly a KDE user, I can't tell you that at the moment. And my friend Chris isn't here with us today, so I'm not going to comment on that one. So anyway, you'll be asked for your password, and then the first time the wizard will run. It'll guide you through the installation, and it's fairly basic to install and start up. Check out the information and the documentation on the website, which is www.fs-security.com, where you'll find all the information about Firestarter. You'll find the complete how-to or documentation information on installing, configuring, etc. Even though once you've done it through Synaptic, you have installed it, there are other distros that don't use Synaptic or that type of package management, so that's why they have the download available, and some people like to build the applications they're going to use from the code, so they can maybe do a slight little modification to suit themselves, and things like that. So that's pretty much sort of our coverage tonight on our little how-to. Sort of any further information on that, or if you want sort of a text type version, check out the Ubuntu forums. They're excellent for that. You could probably even check out the KDE and the GNOME websites as well, and you could have a look at my website at noismo.dnsalias.net. There'll be some information there and there'll be links there. Plenty of resources on the internet. Google is your friend. Not a plug for advertising, but just a tip. It is always very handy. Okay, so open source. What is open source? Well, we'll touch base here on various open source projects that are currently underway. The basic idea of what is open source, and basically, the basic idea behind open source is very simple. When programmers can read, redistribute, and modify the source code of a piece of software, the software evolves. People improve it, people adapt it, people fix bugs. Software gets better, people. Open source makes for better software. If there's only one company or person or a small group of people working on one software package, it does in the long term make it harder for that software to evolve. With thousands upon thousands of developers working on different pieces of software or collectively working on a piece of software, it evolves much quicker than if there are only smaller numbers. But this is probably getting into a sort of area that I probably don't want to touch on just at the moment, as I just wanted to have a bit of a touch on the basics of open source software, and what it's all really about. So there are sort of definitions or parts of the open source definition. There are sort of 10 parts to that. It's open source doesn't just mean access to that source code. There are distribution terms that must comply sort of to that, and basically that sort of is probably a little bit more in-depth than I would really want to go in this podcast, as it's the first of the episode, and just say that people should look for open source software at all opportunities and use it as much as they can, but at the same time not be sort of overly concerned about having to use a piece of non-free software. Again, that is sort of more my opinion than necessarily the opinion of any people that have been mentioned in this podcast, and I mean, I do sort of really want to sort of remain as neutral as possible and stick to facts and keep personal opinions aside, even though there is obviously a bit of a time and a place for those sort of things as well. So that sort of will cover our open source side of it for today, you can sort of check out a heap more of information on open source at opensource.org. Okay, moving on, we'll have a bit of a look at open source on Windows. So this topic sort of is not sort of necessarily under a, well, it is under a Ubuntu Open Source podcast, of course it is. That's why we called it a Ubuntu Open Source podcast. We didn't just call it Ubuntu podcast, we specifically wanted a bit of open source in there, with a tendency to lean towards the Ubuntu side of things, personally, because that's what I'm predominantly using, quite happy find this might be a way to give a bit back to the community, as I'm not a programmer, and help other users out there to sort of get a bit of knowledge about the software, get a bit of an understanding about Ubuntu's means and methods and what they're doing and what they're all about, and also get a bit of an idea about the open source community and about GNU and Linux as a whole, and the whole community idea behind software and computers, and how multiple sort of developers help things along. Okay, so if you basically want to have a bit of a look at some software, or you have a few applications that you do need to run on other software or proprietary software such as Microsoft Windows, registered trademark, which you can then look at things such as Firefox or Mozilla Firefox, which is a great web browser, has many, many features and many, many sort of advantages to using it. Took the world by storm, becoming one of the more popular web browsers, one of the most popular, obviously, other than Internet Explorer, which is on a lot of the computers around. So Firefox is something you can have a bit of a go at as well and have a bit of a look at. It's got a great little intuitive interface, helps block viruses, spyware and pop-up ads, delivers the web faster than ever. Now this is through obviously its caching abilities, so when you're using a back and forth feature on a particular website, it should be a lot faster than before, and you can increase the cache size and things like that. So those sort of things you can sort of check out through the different options under edit and your tools in the menu of Firefox once you've got it installed and you're using it. And check out their website obviously for all their help and online information. It's got great tab browsing, which means you can open up a whole heap of tabbed windows inside the main, which is great for surfing different areas of sort of subjects and topics where you want to sort of have a quick look at a particular item, might be for an assignment for history or a science project where you want to look up different planets or star information on stars and that, or anything like that at once. Then you can tab up heaps there, and you can do live bookmarks as well on sites, which will basically, when you then attack that bookmark again or click on that bookmark again, you'll have updated itself with new information for you if the site's updated, which you can check more about that at Firefox on the greatness of all their little advantages they have. So basically, if you go to www.mozilla.com/Firefox, it should automatically detect your operating systems as Windows for this particular segment and provide you with an icon, if you like, or a logo to click on that you can then download your copy and install it. So get clicking, people. Go to www.mozilla.com/Firefox. Okay, so that sort of is going to bring me to the end of my segment tonight. I sort of have gone a little bit off my initial plan of the way that I had sort of had ideas of how this would roll out, probably more so in the amount of ad-libbing that I did as opposed to what I probably pre-prepared in my little scripty thing. But sort of think obviously it brings a different side of it, and to me I felt quite comfortable. I had a few awkward moments which I'll be editing out, so you're not obviously gonna get those. I might make a bloopers or something one day, but I doubt it. Anyway, so if you liked it, send us an email, let us know. Any comments or suggestions you might have, I'll also consider. If you want to spam me, well that's fine. I mean, I don't suggest it, I would rather you didn't. Please send us some feedback, let us know what you think. I hope sort of what I covered, I sort of was clear enough and was sort of hopefully sort of factual enough that I sort of covered the sort of things that I feel you sort of needed to know, or, well, not needed to know, but we'll probably change this last little piece as well, but just things that I sort of felt, yeah, why not, this is a good way to start, what am I going to do next? It probably comes from having listened to other podcasts out there, and things like that, so it's great to see that there are a few people out there sort of putting their two bobs worth in, the same as I put my two bobs worth in, about what's happening with open source software, little tips on using Ubuntu, Kubuntu, and things like that, other apps that we're going to help you out with. So what we can do is, depending on what feedback we get, we might sort of change the format slightly, we might keep the format the way it is. That'll really come down to the way that people want to send feedback in. So thank you very much and have a great night, and we'll catch you all next week, hopefully. Thank you.